Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. Thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it. Well, today, Governor Bruce Rauner delivered his budget address in Springfield. In the speech, he talked about the need for school funding, which has become a lightning rod issue since Rauner took over, with constant sparring over CPS, pension payments, promised monies. It's gotten so bad that the Chicago Board of Education is suing the state, saying that the state is not being fair with funding, even calling it discriminatory. When asked for comment on the lawsuit, Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis called it a fake fight between Governor Rauner and Mayor Emanuel, not because the issue's fake, but because the issue of inequity in public schools has been there for years, and nobody's done anything about it. And Miss Lewis, she would know. She's been the head of the CTU for 7 years. Before that time, she worked for over 20 years in Chicago public schools as a chemistry teacher, and she is my guest tonight. President Lewis, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
So today, the budget address, you guys have been busy with the union talking about this lawsuit. A lot of people calling up in the media wanting to know what your take is on the Chicago Board of Education lawsuit. You called it a fake fight. Why?
Well, I call anything between Rahm and Rauner a fake fight. Period. It's not about just the, calls for discriminatory spending. We've been showing them this. We've been saying this for how long? You know, it's like, and now you just discover there's discrimination in the way funding is done in Illinois. And primarily it's because of the fact that we rely so heavily on property taxes to fund education. Whereas in states where you see much more equitable funding, the states are responsible for it. So the state has pushed off its responsibility to the districts. And, you know, it's going to be unfair because even within Chicago, you can see that the property values in Roseland or Austin are going to be extremely different from the property value in Lincoln Park or even Rogers Park. So, I mean, you're going to have constant difference and constant inequality built into the system. And that's all, again, highly racialized because Chicago is a highly segregated city. It is, I think, the most segregated city north of the Mason-Dixon line.
And you get the union and yourself, you've been talking about this issue for decades. I mean, I feel like this is something that always comes up. Why do you think it's now that Forrest Claypool and the Chicago Public Schools and the Chicago Board of Education are moving forward with the concept of discriminatory funding?
Well, I think now is because it's to their advantage, because they want to shift the focus away. It's like, puppies, you know, let's get distracted. Let me. Look over there. Look over there. Don't look over here to what we're really doing. Look over there. It's easy to point your finger at somebody else and blame them, you know, because ultimately what they're going to do is cut programs. I asked them why they had baked that $215 million into the budget initially when they knew Rauner was going to not
this
pay.
This is the payment that they're fighting over, the idea that this was supposed to come through the state, but Rauner said it was tied to pension reform. It never happened. He pulled the money.
Well, and then again, Rauner is also being very disingenuous about this because every time they brought this pension reform piece up, the Supreme Court has told them, no, you can't do this. It's unconstitutional, yet they still want to use it as a point of leverage.
Let me ask you, you're seeing this we talk about fake fights and Rauner versus Emanuel and the city versus the state when it comes to funding. Why not, in this case, get together with the city of Chicago, with CPS, and join forces to really put the pressure on the governor and the state house to say, you know what, we want that $210 million. We don't want to cut funding. We don't want a revised budget. Why not now should the union get in force with the city?
You know, it's a good question, but let me answer it like this, because we don't trust CPS. We don't trust using our credibility. Which is, you know, if you look at the polls, we have way more credibility about education issues than anybody else in Chicago. And we've done that because we've come to the table with all kinds of research and it's valued information. And people know we're telling the truth. Forrest Claypool will lie to bat an eye, you know. So why would we signed a contract.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get to that, too.
Okay, we signed a contract. Our members ratified it. The Board of Education ratified it. And within 15 seconds, the ink wasn't even dry. Forrest Claypool's already violating our contract. So I don't trust him. I don't trust CPS. There are so many good programs that CPS will have that we can't work with them on because they either take the money and run, put it someplace else. I don't know that if they, let's say they got the money. How do we know they're going to put it where they say
Well, this was what you were talking about in the press conference yesterday and talking about it even today, this concept that even if the $210 million was given, you question whether or not you should trust CPS to spend it wisely. I mean, you're really pointing to not just Forrest Claypool, but CPS's mismanagement of funds throughout history at this point.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is nothing new. But here's the problem that bothers me. We've got a governor that has been calling for CPS to file bankruptcy. He wants to destroy CPS. CPS isn't going to fight him on the playing field where they could actually win, which is you have to go look at where the money is. The money is in his hedge fund and all these other people, all their good oligarchical friends. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
the private sector, you're saying.
The
right?
Private sector here is not paying their fair share. They're not paying their fair share in property taxes. They're not paying their fair share in income taxes. So the key becomes, when do we make the hard decisions? It's a cowardly decision to cut from CPS budget, from school's budget, from our salaries, from our pensions. That's an easy decision. Because most people aren't going to fight back. The key is we don't trust them. It's just that simple.
Well, when you see Governor Rauner, even in a budget address, talking about
Yeah. The unbudget address. Because
sure, sure.
We haven't had one, and we're not going to get another one.
The thoughts that he's in a weird way, and I would say that he sounds a lot like what you're talking about, this idea that we need to change the way we do business in the state of Illinois or at the Chicago Public Schools, that there needs to be some sort of change, that we need to draw a hard line and change. You may disagree fundamentally on that, what that change is, but the Chicago Teachers Union and the governor, you're similar in the way that there needs to be some sort of change.
The governor and CTU, you can't even say that in the same breath with a straight face. That is absolutely never going to happen.
But he wants to cap property taxes. He's essentially saying we need new ways that we...
But that's not the way. It's not about capping property taxes. If you're going to fund education through property taxes, then you have to make property taxes equitable. They're not. The rich get a discount. They don't pay the full share of their property taxes in taxes. They don't. And yet you take somebody in Robbins, Illinois, or St. Clair County, Illinois, and they're paying way over the value of their house in taxes. So, you know, capping property taxes only helps certain people. It doesn't help the people that need it the most. And I think the problem with that is we have asked to be part of the budgeting process from the beginning, not at the end, here's a budget, you know, just sign off on it. Mm-hmm. CPS is very bad about doing that with us.
I mean, when you were contacted about the lawsuit, you know, it was the first you guys have heard of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you weren't even included in the concept of the Chicago Board of Education suing the state.
Well, we're suing CPS for discrimination against the turnarounds and the school
closings. Right.
We're suing them because they've been discriminatory. The overwhelming majority of teachers who have lost their jobs, teachers and paraprofessionals and clinicians, are Black women and Latina women. You know, I mean, that's just the way it's been. So, I mean, they're going to talk about discrimination with the state? Really? They need to get their own house in order first. And we'll be glad to help them, but they have to come to us on a real partnership basis, and they haven't been willing to do that.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. More with Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis here in The Download tonight, right after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis, talking about today, the budget address, the lawsuit yesterday, the Chicago Board of Education, but also just about Chicago public schools and where we're at. Because it seems the rhetoric in the last couple months has really ratcheted up. And you pointed out in this segment we just had that, you know, the teachers in the union feel that the contract's already been messed with or has been changed by Forrest Claypool. What's your relationship right now? You've gone public saying you want Forrest Claypool to resign, vote of no confidence. Do you feel like there's a way that the union and Chicago Public Schools can work together in the future?
I think there are ways that we can work together, but it's not going to be easy because there is no trust there. I mean, you can't say one thing to me today and 2 days later say something completely opposite. And I'm sitting here going, okay. I mean, there are a couple of programs right now that I'm very excited about working with CPS on. But I can't sign off on that. I will not put my name on something that I know they'll either mess up. Because you know what? To be perfectly honest, you could have the best idea ever. And this one particular idea I brought to CPS 20 years ago. 20 years ago, I brought this idea. And they finally ISBE decided it was a good idea. And then they told CPS, you should try this. So they came to me. And I said, you know what? I know this program very well. I was part of the design team that brought it to CPS in the first place when all they wanted were charter schools. They didn't want any new ideas around how to do school. So guy asked me, well, yeah, we've got this program. We got an RFP. Will you sign on to it? And I said, absolutely not. Hmm. We don't trust you. You know, we can't work together.
And this is
right
really
now.
About the idea of the budget cuts, specifically about the furlough days. This
yes.
is the idea that this was not part of the contract. Once the $215 million wasn't coming from the governor, Forrest Claypool and CPS, they said, we got to take it out on the teachers.
Yeah, right. And they knew that money was never coming. See, that's the other part that bothers me.
It goes back to the idea of you
it
feel they're
disingenuous.
It goes back
to the idea
right?
where I say, why are you baking this $215 million into your budget when you know you're not going to get it? Because the governor has already said he wants these unconstitutional turnaround agenda points done mm-hmm. with other people's pensions. Why are you tying our budget to other people's pension when you knew he was never going to sign that? So I said, I would have never turned that into that. So what did they do? They took away our professional development days only because they didn't want to make parents mad. Because those are days kids don't come to school anyway.
Right.
But those days are extraordinarily important to our members for planning, for doing things that help kids ultimately. You know,
because teaching is not just about when the kids are in the classroom.
No, it really isn't. And I've heard people say, well, we want the money in the classroom. And what they're really saying is we want the money in the toys. We don't want the money in the people that are actually going to be manipulating those toys. We want the money in the toys. We want make sure the computers or the whiteboards or whatever, smart boards, whatever you want and need. But the key is we have constantly underfunded our schools, under-resourced them, starved them. We have an epidemic of violence in this city, and we cannot get social workers and clinicians in those classrooms to help these children get through
that. Let me ask you, interesting, because we've had this conversation on the show talking about Chicago violence, and one, you know, there's a lot of head-scratching about the idea of why we've seen such an uptick, why 2016 was more than 2015, 2014. And, you know, Pete and I were talking about it not too long ago about the, you know, it takes a little bit of time. I mean, there was an unprecedented amount of school closings that happened in Chicago in 2014, was it?
2013.
Mm-hmm. Is it wrong to draw a line to what has happened to communities when some of those anchors, schools
disappear
mm-hmm. to what we're seeing today in 2016, 2017 that is creating a national uproar?
I would say yes and no. You know, I am going to say yes because this is something we predicted, we told them would happen, and it has, and they're scratching their heads about it because they didn't have a plan. There was no plan. The plan was to shut these schools down because somebody told them to. Eli Broad, you know, the multimillionaire real estate guy in California, came up with a plan. And CPS basically used that plan. And he finally took it down off his website, but it was there for a while. And we kept pointing, here's the plan. These guys in these little so-called school reform circles, the billionaire boys club, as Diane Ravitch calls them, have been circulating these ideas for years. But the key is to destabilize the institutions. Because not only do we see an uptick in crime, we see an uptick in mass incarceration. We are seeing constantly this issue of we underfund and under-resourced communities, and then we expect people to just pull themselves up by their bootstraps when there are no jobs to go to, when there are no social services. The safety net is gone. So, you know, part of the problem is so that's the yes. Mm-hmm. The no part is that these things have been bubbling around for not just decades, but
way before 2013, right?
Way before 2013.
Of course.
But the impetus for them have been in place. So it's a yes and kind of situation.
Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis is my guest tonight. We'll take a break here so we can get an update on tonight's news. But we'll come back. We'll come back after the news and talk some more with Karen Lewis. You know, I'm interested because you've got a fight on your hands with the city of Chicago and the Chicago Public Schools, a fight on the hands with Springfield. Another one brewing in Washington with the Department of Education and Betsy DeVos, who, I mean, there's a lot. I don't know how you keep it all straight at the Chicago Teachers Union. Karen Lewis, my guest tonight on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio tonight, Karen Lewis, the Chicago Teachers Union president. We're talking about education. Taking over the job at Chicago Teachers Union 7 years ago, did you think it would be more politics than policy and education? I mean, it just feels like everything about education in Chicago is about money and about, you know, whether or not we can keep schools open, things like that. But none of it seems to be at the forefront about how we're actually teaching the kids.
Yes.
I knew it would be?
I knew this job was going to be hard. I tell people all the time, I knew the job was tough when I took it. I didn't know how all-consuming it would be. You know, I really did not know that, to be honest with you. However, I felt pretty prepared because I have been reading a lot of policy stuff. And to be honest with you, part of our operation comes under the CTU Foundation, which does have a professional development arm, our Quest Center. So we are constantly developing courses so that our members can get better at what they do. We pride ourselves on that kind of work, and we're never going to give that up. You know, but yes, there's all this fighting, but, you know, Justin, I'm from the South Side, okay? I know how to pull the earrings off and put the Vaseline on. Let's go. You know,
Has it gotten better or worse for you? Because, I mean, early on, we were introduced to you on a public level when you were fighting and sparring with Arne Duncan. That was, you know, and then I remember.
I wasn't fighting with him. I made fun of him.
Made fun of him.
And I regretted it, and I apologized to him.
Okay, so I throw out some names, you know, mm-hmm. blast from the past. Jean-Claude mm-hmm. Brizard, Ron Huberman.
I got along with Ron Huberman so well. I really enjoyed our time together, and then he left.
Barbara Bird Bennett.
I got along with her.
And Forrest Claypool. Well. So let me ask you, I mean, is it getting worse? I mean, do you see over the 7 years in your tenure as president, do you see that the relationship with the city, with the Chicago Public Schools, is it the same? Is it better? Is it worse?
It's a sine curve. And it depends on what we're talking about. When we're talking about strictly education, it's bliss. It's bliss. But when we're talking about...
You mean bliss in the sense that it's getting better?
That it's really good. You know, I have had excellent relationships. So let's go through all my CEOs. So the first one was Ron Huberman, okay, and he and I got along extremely well, but he had no knowledge of pedagogy or anything else. So, you know, I worked with Barbara Eason Watkins on that. So that worked well. Mm-hmm. All right, then the next person was Jean-Claude Brizard. I really tried to help him because I wanted him to be successful. And we had a lot in common. I think he was a chemistry teacher or a physics teacher. And I also worked with Noemi Donoso, who was his chief ed officer. I think the problem is that the CEO is a job that should not exist, period. We should have a superintendent, period, the end. But then you couldn't have unqualified people do the work. You know, people have mm-hmm. to have that certificate to be a superintendent.
CEO means you can put political operatives in the place.
Exactly.
Right.
So,
which is what we've seen. I mean, Ron Huberman, that's what he was.
Ron Huberman, and before him, Arnie and Paul Vallis. Let's not forget the first of the CEOs, which when I heard about him initially, I was like, there's a problem here. These people don't know anything about education.
But
how do you run a system when you don't know anything about education?
What I find interesting, Karen, is that, you know, history repeats itself. I mean, we see what we had with Paul Vallis and Gary Chico and the idea of bureaucrats or, as you say, CEOs taking over public education. We see in Washington right now a Secretary of Education that was just confirmed, unprecedented vote for Vice President Mike Pence, but Betsy DeVos coming in to essentially shape policy and American education without that experience, without the experience from the classroom. It seems that that model, as much as it's sort of been a broken model in Chicago, is one that is being embraced around the country, if not at the top levels.
Well, of course, because ultimately this is a problem with governance, which is mayoral control, which is why we support an elected representative school board, which passed, by the way, out of the House with Republican votes. It was 104 to whatever. I don't remember the total vote count, but then got stopped in the Senate because of other relationships that Rahm has, because Rahm doesn't want to lose control of the schools.
Well, it's clout. I mean, it's money, right?
I totally get it. But then don't turn around and point your finger at me and my staff and my faculty and my paraprofessionals and clinicians and say, you all are the cause of the problem. We are not. The cause of the problem is revenue, unwarranted charter expansion and proliferation, and the lack of governance, the lack of a... If we had an elected school board, those people would have constituents that they are accountable to. Mm-hmm. Rahm isn't accountable to anybody except for every 4 years. And I tried like as hard as I could to get rid of him last time. But, you know, I got sick and I couldn't help Chewy the way I wanted to, but, you know, ran him into a runoff, you know, so that was unprecedented. So we have to work so many different angles. I would just like to concentrate on making us a world-class institution by, you know, providing all the kind of professional development that our members need.
During the appointment of Betsy DeVos, I read a bunch about education that I hadn't really paid much attention to. I'll be honest, like, you know, as a person in this business, you know, there's not too many times I'm going to dig deep into educational policy. And I read a whole piece about Title I, mm-hmm, and the concept of giving more money when it comes to create things that are equitable when it comes to funding schools. Title I says that more money should go to areas that have poor communities. And then also about the idea of school choice. Let me play devil's advocate for you, right? Because I have a great mind in studio.
I know where
with
you're
me.
Going. No, go ahead.
for as long as public education has been around, mm-hmm, and as we've seen trouble with it, meaning we've seen schools underperform, some fail, kids coming
okay,
out.
Let's
no,
not use
right?
that
okay,
word
not
failure.
Fail, not fail. Okay.
That's
fine.
Not. We will
right.
not use that.
Let's not get caught up in that. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll put it to the side. Republicans, and you see this with Trump and DeVos, they feel like it's time for something different.
I agree, but it's not what they're doing is not going to help public schools at all. First of all, you don't take resources away from schools that are already under-resourced. All right? So if you go look at the schools where they send their children, what do those schools look like? They have small classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have, you know, no more than 15 to 18 kids in a class. And so they have individual attention. There's a variety of ways to do school. We are still doing school like we did 150 years ago.
Right.
All right? So you and I agree completely. I would like to see more competency-based learning where it's not about seat time. It's about what do you know? When do you get to the point where there are kids that are really good at math? Why are you sitting an entire year in an algebra class when you can probably finish the course in a semester? You know, but you may need a year and a half to do your English class, you know. So why can't you have that? Why can't we do these things where we put together professionally modules for kids to do and work to their best ability?
Do the politicians and the policymakers, do they have to at least come to the conclusion that, or to a baseline, that public education is here to stay this is what we're going to do before they can do things where they tinker and move around and change, shift the paradigm when it comes to what's math and what's English and what's a grade, things of that nature. But we have to have a baseline agreement that public education is valued. And it seems like that still has not been determined.
No, because public education is essentially a very democratic process everywhere else, but of course in a place that doesn't have an elected school board. But it is, the initial discussions around public education in the 1600s were so that we could build good citizens. That's what it was for, to have people come along who had a skill set not only to work, but to participate in society in a way that moves society forward. Okay? We can't have that if we don't believe fundamentally in what the goals of public education are. So that's what I would say. I think you're absolutely right.
Do you feel,
talk about a baseline.
When you see what the background of the people who are running the Department of Education and the emphasis on school choice and in some cases, more on private schools, do you fear for the future of public education? Do you feel like politicians could, in our lifetime, do away with the concept?
I don't, because I don't think the people will allow it to happen. And I mean, this is the whole point. People always say, why are you always protesting? Why? Because this is what makes differences. It really does. People have to stand up and fight for what's theirs. Because if you continue to put your head down in the sand and act like, okay, if I just hunker down, it'll all go over. That's the way we used to do. Because I know that every 5 years we get a whole new set of people coming in telling us this is what we have to do and this is the key. And if you do this, it's going to make everything better, blah, blah, blah. As educators, we've seen this. So our natural response to this is usually, like I said, just to hunker down and hope it all passes over. The people that are running this now are very well-heeled. They have a lot of money. We can never match them dollar for dollar. But what we have, more and more people that are saying, this is not right, this is not fair. And they're not union people necessarily. These are parents, these are community members that know there's a certain amount of fairness. What people like Betsy DeVos represent, as far as I'm concerned, is the notion that public school children need to be compliant. You know, they just need to be compliant. Just do what we tell you to do. Sit down, shut up. Sit down before you break something to that effect. And I think that we have seen an anger and an uprising in parents. Parents did a huge thing when they started opting their kids out from the test and punish, routine. They fought against the Common Core. I mean, parents have so much power. And when they start exercising it, it makes these people very, very nervous. Hmm.
We didn't even get to standardized testing. We had so much stuff we could talk. You got to come back. And, my last question tonight, you talked a little bit about 2015 and the idea that your health kind of derailed a mayoral run or helping Chuy Garcia. Your health has been such a public thing. People have talked about it. How long do you think you are going to be in this job?
Being the
president of the Chicago Teachers
Union. It's a good question. As long as my members want me to be. I mean, that is their decision, actually, ultimately.
But you have the decision if you don't want to run again, right?
Yes, I do. But again, it depends on what my members want. I really listen to them and I pay attention to them, so, which is kind of rare in union, in the union world. But, this is the way I roll.
Karen Lewis is the president of the Chicago Teachers Union. She's my guest tonight on The Download. Karen, thanks for being here.
Justin, thanks for having me.